Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. End-of-life issues are never easy to discuss, especially with an elderly parent. My guest today has written about the most entertaining book you'll ever read on her own experiences of caring for her elderly parents and the family's joint avoidance in speaking about her parents' rapidly failing health. Roz Chast is an award-winning cartoonist. You've seen her work for The New Yorker for many, many years. She's also done work for Mother Jones Magazine, Scientific American, and the Harvard Business Review, believe it or not. Her graphic memoir, Can We Talk About Something More Pleasant, depicts her difficult journey in caring for her elderly parents, and it does that with humor and honesty. The book won the National Book Critics Circle Award for Autobiography, the inaugural Kirkus Prize for Nonfiction, and was a finalist for the National Book Award. She will kick off a 3-program series on end-of-life issues, sponsored by the Tulsa City County Library and the nonprofit Hospice Clare House. The series gets underway tomorrow evening at Hardesty Regional Library at 8316 East 93rd Street. She'll be speaking about her book and signing as well. The program gets underway at 6:45, and the series will continue on 2 successive Tuesday nights at the library. You can learn more at tulsalibrary.org. Roz Chast is my guest today. Roz Chast, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
It must not have been an easy decision to decide to write this memoir. What made you decide to write about your experience with your parents as they reach that extreme old age and towards the end of life?
Well, I think that when something is, interesting to me or just emotionally complex, it's something that I do generally feel like I want to write about, maybe to partly help me understand it myself. And also, there was a sense for me, especially about this book, that I didn't want to forget my parents, you know. I didn't want to forget certain conversations that I'd had with them or the way they sounded, or not because the events were so necessarily joyful or anything, or, you know, hunky-dory, but just that I didn't want to forget. And I know, at least the way my memory works, you know, the new memories come on top of the old memories, and then everything starts to fade and gets kind of like all smushed into one big pile. And, you know, many of the cartoons in this book I had done before, way before I had ever thought about doing a book about them, but I had done them, you know, when I'd have an insane conversation with my mother about the shoes or my father with the dirty checkers or, you know, I didn't want to forget, you know.
Now, you'll have to explain the dirty checkers. He thought he could get sick from picking up some dirty set of checkers.
It was some whole conversation where he just started telling me about how when he was a child, he had gotten an infection from washing a set of dirty checkers. And it was just, one day I just thought about it, and I just thought, this is so funny. I don't know, just like I just never thought about, you know, dirty checkers before. You know, checkers that I guess were dusty or grimy, and maybe he had a cuticle or something, you know, infection. I don't know, it was just so bizarre. And I didn't want to forget details like that for some reason.
You know, one of the things after looking at this book, and of course it is a graphic memoir, so you have your cartoonist work all throughout the book. When I go back and look at your work, I see that you're, at least the same image that you have in the book shows up in a lot of your cartoons. Your mother and father, at least this caricature, show up in quite a few cartoons from way back in your career.
I think that when I draw people in my cartoons, they're not specific people. They're more general types.
Archetypes.
They're archetypes. They're blends, you know. I mean, if I'm drawing a cartoon about parents, they're a blend of my parents and other people's parents and parents have seen on TV and parents have read about and parents have dreamed about. And, you know, it's a more of a blend as opposed to this book where it really is my parents. But
the name of the book, Can We Talk About Something More Pleasant? When a grown child decides to have that conversation with their parents about, you know, how do you want the last phase of your life to go? That was a difficult subject for you to broach with your parents. It seemed like it was particularly difficult in your case.
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine a family in which it wouldn't be difficult, at least on some level, because it's a sort of terrible conversation. It's admitting that, you know, there's going to come a time where these things are going to have to, you know, happen. And it wasn't just that like I was the one who wanted to have this conversation and they kept avoiding it. I think we all wanted to avoid it as much as possible, as long as possible. And then at a certain point, you know, it had to be talked about, really.
And did you have any sense of your parents' wishes for, like, advanced directives or anything like that, you know, ahead of time? Or was it spurred by crisis? Because that's one of the most stressful things. It's when these decisions aren't made in advance or at least talked about some semblance, usually these decisions have to be made in a crisis.
Well, I would say that it wasn't the worst part of the crisis, but it was when things were starting to sort of flip, you know, pretty seriously. I think they were probably about 94 or 93 or 94. And I had a very good friend who recommended that I speak with an elder lawyer. And she had a friend who was an elder lawyer who she had worked with her mother, who had been in her late 90s. And this person lived in Brooklyn and was able to come to my parents' apartment. And he was great. And so it was before things got, you know, ultra critical, but it was when things were definitely starting to slide and I realized, you know, I needed to know about things. And he was great because there were things that I didn't even know that they existed. You know, there were phrases that I was totally unfamiliar with, like healthcare proxy. I mean, I just didn't know what it was. And I wouldn't have known to ask my parents, you know, who would you like to be your healthcare proxy? Because I didn't even know that the term existed or what it was. So I didn't really know in advance what what they wanted, and having this elder care lawyer was very helpful. And, you know, we talked about wills. He helped me organize, you know, helped them organize financial things. We figured out, like, I had to figure out stuff about their pensions, things that I knew nothing about.
And I think, well, that's one of the best pieces of advice you come away from the book is, you know, you really need to get somebody who specializes in these elderly issues involved with your situation, almost like a mediator in many senses.
Yeah.
Many
I mean, it's not something that most people just, you know, happen to know. And I certainly didn't. And it's, you know, I can't say I have really any advice for anybody in this book because this is just really about, you know, what happened, my story. But an elder lawyer was something that I found extremely helpful.
Well, the funny thing is you're reading about these two wonderful, long-lived lives winding down, and yet I have to admit I found myself laughing an awful lot in this book.
Yeah, they were funny. I mean, not always intentionally, but, yes, that, you know, the conversations were sometimes just hilarious.
Your relationship with your parents, I want to say there was love, but it was fraught with difficulties, it sounds like, from the way you write in the book. Would you say
that's true.
Yeah. You know, your father and your mother were one of these, it sounds like, the kind of polar opposites that really clicked and really...
Yeah.
Can you talk about the relationship?
Oh, I think that, you know, as I said in the book, I think that they really were kind of soulmates. So they said that they were. They told me many times that they were soulmates, and I think they were this kind of old-fashioned couple that, even though they fought and they made each other crazy, I think, they just felt very close to each other also in a way that, I don't know, I don't know if in modern times that even really exists, you know?
Mm-hmm. Your mother was very dominant. It was a matriarchal home.
Oh, big time. Big time, yeah. She was very sure of who she was and what she thought. And, you know, and her father was just more of a gentle soul.
Both of them were educators. And I think you sort of nail it on the head when you tell us what sort of educators there were. Your father taught languages.
Yeah.
And your mother was a vice principal.
Exactly. She was the disciplinarian.
Yeah. Well, one of the things it's really difficult. Your parents wanted to remain in their apartment. That was home. And really, they probably stayed longer than probably healthcare professionals would say was healthy.
Yeah, they stayed. I mean, I felt like they got out of there before a really horrible thing happened. Like, my father, you know, blew up the apartment house by, like, leaving the stove on, or, you know, them setting it on fire, or, you know, my mother having some sort of incredibly horrible fall, or, you know, which just, it was getting bad. I mean, the, you know, the EMTs had come to the apartment a couple of times, a few times, and it was just not a good situation. But they didn't want to leave. You know, they were afraid to leave. Mm-hmm. It was their home.
And you kind of talk about some of the telltale signs, and in your case of your parents' apartment was, you said it was the level of grime. It was not like it hadn't been cleaned recently. It hadn't been cleaned in a long time. And it was because, you know, they were in their 90s. You know, you can't physically do that activity anymore. Yet it was probably very difficult for you to, you know, how did you go about broaching the subject? Did you try to broach the subject over a couple of times and were rebuffed, or what exactly?
I did. And I was rebuffed sometimes. But then I would hear things like my mother would say that she would tell me on the phone that she thought maybe it was a good idea if they went to assisted living, and my father would hate the idea, and then my father would want to do the idea, and then my mother wouldn't want to. And, you know, I think that they just did not want to, but they did. If eventually there was a crisis where, well, it had started a year before the ultimate crisis, but my mother had an attack of diverticulitis, which is, you know, probably a lot of your listeners know what this is, but it's an intestinal inflammation, and it was not diverticulosis, it was an inflammation, and she was really sick and in an enormous amount of pain, and she got taken to the hospital, and she was in the hospital for a little over 2 weeks, I can't exactly remember, but my father could not be left alone, so he came to stay with us, and it was during that time that I realized that he had a lot more dementia than I had known, you know, because when he was living in the apartment with my mother, a lot of these, he didn't have Alzheimer's, he had senile dementia, so he didn't have much long-term memory, and he kept forgetting where my mother was, and he had a lot of paranoia, and it was really, really frightening. But then he did go back, after my mother got out of the hospital, and she went back into the apartment, and my father came back to live with her. They were in the apartment for another year after her hospital stay. And that was when things went pretty downhill because they were not leaving the apartment, you know, to shop. She was too weak to go shopping. And she fell a few times and the EMTs would come. And then she would be afraid. She was afraid to go to back to the hospital. Oh, it was just one thing after another. And finally, they did agree after a year in this really scary sort of state to come up to where I live and stay in an assisted living place 10 minutes from me. And that was a lot better, I mean, from my point of view, but, you know.
What I found interesting was you said really the home, the apartment disguised the extent of your father's dementia. It's until you got him out of that familiar surroundings. He had coping mechanisms. He because he was supremely comfortable, he was able to sort of compensate, if you will. When he's in an unfamiliar situation, then the situation overwhelmed him.
Yeah, well, especially because my mother wasn't there with him anymore, and he was so dependent on her way before, you know, dementia.
Right.
That was just their relationship. She sort of steered the ship, and he wanted her to steer the ship. And, you know, she made all the decisions. She told him what to do, and everything was hunky-dory. And when she was not there, he was just really, you know, adrift. It was sad. It was very difficult.
My guest today is Roz Chast, a cartoonist and humorist. Her book, Can We Talk About Something More Pleasant, won the National Book Critic Circle Award for Autobiography. And she'll be appearing in Tulsa for a library discussion with Claire House, looking at end-of-life issues. Her book, Can We Talk About Something More Pleasant, uses her graphic cartoonist style into a graphic memoir of the last years of her parents and her relationship. And this was made so much more difficult by being an only child. it's so tough to have it with sibling support. Being an only child makes it just really, really, really tougher. I would imagine you had your own family at the time, so you were probably at your wit's end because you're living in Connecticut. You're having to commute to Brooklyn to take care, back and forth, to take care of your parents.
Yeah, it was pretty nutty. It was a very nutty time. But, you know, I mean, to talk about the only child thing, I've heard from people, and I know people that had siblings who it didn't, sometimes if it was a good relationship, then yeah, it was definitely a help. But there are people where the siblings, you know, maybe one of them doesn't want to do anything, you know, and then it can get extremely acrimonious, or people have different ideas of what to do. And that, you know, is another set of problems that I didn't have to cope with.
Well, one of the things, this book is so rich with the memories of your parents, and it seems like, obviously, since it was a book of their last years, it's that time when you were really interfacing with them quite often and, you know, actively intervening in their life because they couldn't take care of things. But was that I know it was tough, and it was tough watching your parents fail, but at the same time, did you feel like you got something out of that and new insights into your relationship?
No. I mean, I wish I could say, yeah. but no, I mean, I don't think I did such a fantastic job. I look back and I wish that I had been more patient in some ways. And I don't know. I feel like I just kind of muddled through it. And took notes when I could, and I don't know.
Well, you know, when he was living with you, you had this situation where he was just bombarding you with questions. And I keep thinking, you know, it's very humorous the way you retell the story. And in fact, he was obsessed with his bank book.
The bank books. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say the book is, you know, pretty much that is what happened. I mean, I did wind up making a sign because I just, you know, just said no bank book talk because it started to make me feel insane, like I was going to scream or, you know, bash his head in or something. And that is not an appropriate response to somebody who has dementia, you know. So when he would forget and start going on about things like the bank books or whatever, and you know, I would just hold up this sign that just said, no bank book talk. You know? And well, that would remind him, you know, to just kind of change the subject.
Well, you know, it's funny, knowing some of your other work, you have a very famous cartoon of How to Drive Your Partner Insane in Bed or something.
Yeah.
It's basically somebody basically bombarding the partner who's trying to sleep with questions. And it's kind of reminded me of some of the cartoons in this book about this section where he is just rattling on question after question that are sort of nonsensical, non sequitur. And I can't imagine just being sort of the captive audience for that.
Oh, it's my daughter had enormous patience for him. I mean, I don't know. She really adored him, and I loved him too. But like, It did make me crazy. She had more patience than I did, and you know, I really admire her for that.
One of the eventually, as your parents' health declined, you had to find what became known as the place.
Yeah, the place.
And the place was something they definitely knew about and was something they wanted to avoid at all costs. They saw through all the pleasant euphemisms. They saw that as the shitty rest hotel and next stop, whatever comes next.
I mean, the names are just, some of these, the names of these places are they're kind of fraught. I mean, they sound a little creepy to me, but, you know, Final Bridge.
but you eventually found a fairly nice place for them. And then you have to go clean out the apartment.
Yeah.
I tell you, that's one of the worst things that any child has to do is clean out the family home or family apartment after, you know, when the parents are either deceased or not coming back. And yeah. and your the book is hilarious because your parents are that age, and my parents were the same age. They're not hoarders. I don't think they're hoarders, but they were children. This is the way I've always thought of it. They were children of privation, so they kept everything because you never know when you're going to need it. Was that the same? Is that your same sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the depression.
Yeah.
You know, children of privation and also the depression. And I mean, my mother used to say things to me. She'd say, "Find a penny, pick it up all the day. You'll have good luck. You know, use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without." You know, you didn't throw away a rubber band. You did not throw away a paper clip. Never threw away a pencil until the lead met the eraser. You know, or there could be like no eraser left. But if it had a little bit of lead, you know, you used it.
Yeah. Well, and then this is the one point where you're not drawing the pictures. You actually took photographs of what I guess you would call it as the Chasta Family Museum.
Yeah. Well, I felt like, I mean, I took the pictures first for myself because I knew I was going to throw most of it away or get rid of it in some way and, you know, not keep it. And I wanted to remember what it looked like, you know. But I think also for the book, I wanted proof, you know, because if I described certain things, maybe people would think I was exaggerating or something. But, you know, you can see they were definitely, they weren't hoarders, but they just did not throw anything away.
The first page has my mother's glasses, all from before my time. Three pairs of glasses that were, looked like they were stylish in the 40s and 50s, maybe.
Maybe the 30s and 40s, I was thinking.
Yeah, the Museum of Old Schick Shavers.
Yeah. I mean, these are like patched together with like masking tape. It's just a very different thing, you know, from our time.
Yeah, and as your parents were educators, you might expect to see a few pencils, but we're talking more than a few pencils. We're talking massive collections of pencils.
Oh, yeah. This was the tip of the pencil iceberg is what I photographed. I mean, it was just every drawer was just thousands of pencils. It was insane.
There was a drawer full of just lids of jars.
Yes. Why? I don't know this. You know, I mean, stacks of empty egg cartons. Why? You know, it's just a very strange kind of thing.
Yeah. My guest today is Roz Chasta, a cartoonist and humorist. You can see her work over the years in The New Yorker, and her most recent book is Can We Talk About Something More Pleasant, which is a graphic memoir of her relationship with her parents in their last few years. And it really is a wonderful book to let just sort of maybe introduce. Were you thinking that this might be a way to introduce some of these topics in families that they're sort of starting to deal with this, or was this more cathartic for you?
Well, as I said, it was really kind of neither. It was really a way for me to remember my parents. I mean, it was a kind of when you write down conversations or you draw somebody so that you don't forget, you know? I mean, that was really the primary purpose, if there was one, you know, for me.
Yeah. Now, once they moved to the place, they had been so set in their, just the two of them, dealing with other people was quite difficult for a while.
Yeah.
Or maybe never became easy, really.
No, it never became easy. They really had been each other's only, other person for so, so long. You know, they were really out of practice with socializing or listening to other people or meeting people who were different from them.
Well, it is a really interesting book. For anybody who's gone through this, you're going to recognize a lot of these situations. And I know I'm sure you missed your mother and father, but the way you do it, it uses a lot of humor to sort of push aside probably what it was a lot of sadness and tension, and that feeling of helplessness, I think, in the situation too, which as an, I would think as an only child, that was rough.
I think that for almost anybody, it's not like you go through this and then you get to go through it, you know, you get better at it, you know, with time. It's like we go through this with our parents once, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are people who, for various reasons, are, you know, better at it and worse at it. But I don't know. I can't imagine that it's really easy for anybody. It's because it's also kind of weird. It's like since you were born, your parents were there, and then, you know, they're not.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what are you up to these days? This book has taken, it's sort of taken on a life of its own. It, you know, came out last year. You're still doing talks about it, and a lot of end-of-life groups like Clare House here in Tulsa are wanting you to come and talk about it. Is this something you still feel comfortable talking about,
I mean, I'm fine talking about mm-hmm. it. I think it's an interesting topic, I think. Because, you know, also, you know, it's not like, well, my parents went through it, but thank God I won't have to. You know, I mean, we all know that we're heading, you know, it's a kind of a one-way road here.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things you were talking about in the last, your mother's last days, she developed this very close, seemed like to be a very close relationship with her close-in caregiver at the place.
Oh, yeah, she did.
And you had some heart-to-hearts in the last few months and days of her life, and I think you came away. You know, you said you started reflecting on the early things that sort of formed your relationship. And in the book, you say, you know, I vow to sort of make myself different. Your mother was fond of saying, I'm not your friend, I'm your mother. And you kind of vowed to be a friend and mother to your children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then I think that's also generational, don't you, in a way?
Yes. Yeah. I think that was child rearing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was child rearing. And, you know, I gather that your parents were sort of similar in age to mine. And I think that was, you know, it was their personality. It was my mother's personality, too, you know, but it was also the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you still doing working on cartoons? So that's
sure.
New Yorker or other publications, or are you sort of spread around to various publications these days?
Mostly for the New Yorker, mm-hmm. but I have other projects that I'm working on, so books and whatnot.
All right. Well, we wish you success with those, and we look forward to your appearance in Tulsa. Roz Chass, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Cartoonist Roz Chass is best known for her work from The New Yorker and her books, Theories of Everything, Selected, Collected, and Health-Inspected Cartoons of Roz Chass. She also illustrated Steve Martin's book, The Alphabet from A to Y with Bonus Letter Z. Her most recent book won the National Book Critics Circle Award for Autobiography, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant?, which will be the title of her talk for the Tulsa City County Library tomorrow evening at 6:45 at Hardesty Regional Library at 8316 East 93rd Street. Information at tulsalibrary.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.